Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, hello, hello from an alleyway. I have to start an episode with hello from an alleyway. Hello from an alleyway, pretty close to Camden Tube, and it's a rather ostentatious alleyway, if my guests today don't mind my saying so. I'm at Climate Campaign 1010. I was really expecting to see something downbeat, and instead I'm outside giant golden wrought iron gates. With me, Alice Bell and Jesse Schaaf. They are both campaigners, and they work for 1010. Hello, you both.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. Can we get to the meat of the issues we're here to discuss today? Why are your gates painted gold?
I think they're gold just because next doors are gold. Although, no, they're horrible grey now. But it goes with the bright... We are bright pink as our colour, and there is a kind of... 1010 it tries to be a bit unusual in compared to other climate charities in that we take a positive attitude, which doesn't mean that we think that climate change is good, because it's not. It's really, really horrifically bad. But within all the despair and awfulness of thinking about climate change, we try and bring the hope. So it's things people can positively do to take action and actually combat it. And as part of that, we paint things gold and bright pink. And
we also have flamingos as our mascot.
Wonderful. Yes.
See those perched in the used oil canisters.
They're actually named Nigel and who's the other one?
I don't know.
They're named after climate sceptics. James, yeah.
Dellingpole?
Yeah, I think so.
And Lawson?
Yeah.
Right, there we go. Yes, we're talking about climate-y things today. Particularly, we're talking about solar power. What do you think of the choice of day on which to discuss this?
Well, it's a very convenient day to bust a myth about solar, that it doesn't work when it's cloudy.
Right, because, yes, we're teetering on the brink of rain.
Yeah.
What are we going to go and look at?
We're going to look at a few spots around the area that have some interesting solar installations. A school.
Some housing. Business. But we thought we'd also play with our new app, which is called Look Up, which is meant to make people look up to thinking about our natural resources like wind and solar rather than looking down to fossil fuels. But it's a bit like Pokemon Go, but... I mean, it's not as fun as Pokemon Go. It's quite fun, though. The idea is to have something that's fun and lets you spot roofs that could have solar. So look up and sort of reimagine our roofs. So we might have a play and spot roofs that don't currently have solar, which could do, which, much as I hate to be pessimistic, is one of the more... It's one of the sad things about London is that we are not tapping into our solar potential. London, you know, it's not known for its great weather, but it, as Jesse says, the solar panels could work on days like this, but we haven't really been installing enough of them.
And we'll be aiming, I hope, to find out why that is. So I was doing a bit of research around the topic in preparation for the interview. Is it true that we are sixth in the world in this country for the total amount of solar coverage that we've got? Does that sound right to you?
About right.
Really?
I'm not sure what the... Yeah, I would have to look it up, but we're not doing too badly, I think, as, you know, but we could be doing better. Is the kind of line.
Sixth in the world is fantastic, sure.
We're not anywhere near, you know, China, America, and Germany are ahead of us. But, you know, over the last 6 years, we have had a boom in solar. And unfortunately, that's had the rug pulled out from under it in the last 6 months to a year. But we're not doing too badly.
Obviously, China and America, the first, I think their numbers one and two in the total amount of coverage.
Yeah.
And that makes sense with them having so much land. But for us to be in at number six, a little island like us, that's quite impressive, no?
If that's, it might be per capita.
No, it's not. That is the total amount of solar kit.
I'm still not super surprised because, I mean, there's lots of places where you can put solar. Well, for example, one of the ways in which Britain is a world leader in solar, or in London actually, is kind of record breaking is we have the largest solar array on a reservoir, so you can make use of space that is also being used for other things. So the Queen Elizabeth Reservoir, which is Walton on Thames, are we going to include that as London? It's sort of out towards Heathrow. That is currently the world's biggest floating solar farm, and it's a really good way of using reservoir space because the solar panels float on the reservoir, and the reservoir keeps the solar panels cool, which makes them more efficient. It's one of the reasons why solar's pretty good in places like Britain, is it doesn't overheat, at least. So they can be, and Scotland does great solar, partly because it's lots of sun but it doesn't get too hot. But the solar panels get cooled by the reservoir, but on top of that they also shade the reservoir, which keeps the reservoir from overheating and also prevents algae growing. So it's a really good idea to put solar on a roof, because otherwise it's just not, the space isn't being used. But places like reservoirs, you can just put loads of solar on. And there have been some really entrepreneurial solar people in the UK that have taken advantage of space like that.
I think the other thing, thinking UK wide, is that there's a bit of perception that solar takes up a lot of room, and putting it on roofs is a great idea, but even with some of the deployment in fields, a sort of solar farm that you might see on the train, I think the stats are that compared to the amount of land used for golf courses, it's tiny. You know, that we use something like 2% of the UK's land for golf courses. If we built twice as much solar as we have at the moment, we might get to 1%, you know, something like that. You know, it's really the perception that we don't have enough land to build the solar that we need isn't true, particularly because we can start putting on our roofs in a much greater scale than we have at the moment. The thing for London when talking about solar is that, talking about the success that we've had in the UK, is that London's fallen behind. It hasn't kept up with other regions of the UK, other cities in the UK, in taking advantage of its roof space to install solar. So we've had a report by Greenpeace before the mayoral election asking the question, why isn't London using its roof space? You know, that's what we've got in London. We've got a lot of roofs and we're not putting them to use.
Is one of the problems not that we've got a lot of small roofs who don't all belong to the same person?
Yeah, so we have got a lot of small roofs that are quite high, which also means it's quite expensive to get scaffolding, and also because it's London, everything's expensive, so putting up scaffolding costs more in London than other places. There's a lot of shade because it's very built up, so when you do have a roof, there might be another building in the way shading them, which doesn't mean it's great. There are problems with some sort of mini, like the kind of model where in other parts of the country you see lots of domestic household owners putting panels on their roof. It's harder to do in London. Also, we have a very transient population, and we have a lot of people who share the same roof. There are loads of really cool ways around that. Like, another thing where London has actually been a world leader is some of the community energy projects on social housing in Brixton and Hackney, where they say, well, we share a roof, let's share solar panels. And you can buy a share Now, if you own your own house and you want to put solar panels on it, it might be several grand as an outlay. You'll get the money back potentially, although since the cuts to solar support, it'll probably take you a bit longer. But the model was, you know, you paid a couple of grand, then you get the money back. But the model for the social housing ones is you invest 50 quid in like communal solar array on your roof, and then you'll all get a bit of the money back over years. And it's much lower outlay at the first go, so if you don't have several grand, as well as not owning your own roof, you know, it's a bit easier, it's a bit more accessible. And this, yes, there's been some brilliant projects in London on that model.
Well, particularly in those places that you mentioned where it's possible to get a spirit of community up. I think everywhere else in London everybody hates each other.
To prove you wrong and show you another area, there's been a recent install in Highgate on a church, St Anne's Church in Highgate, mm-hmm. called Power Up North London, raised some money from the community there to put some panels on the church. So that was an interesting project.
Well, another community centre there, another community hub.
Exactly, yeah, a church, so it was a well-used building. You got lots of people coming in and learning about solar because they're going to see the panels on the roof. And also just because it's a listed building. So one of the things that can hold you back when it comes to solar is if you've got, old buildings and people don't want it, you've got permission to be needed to change the appearance. And you know, we do have a lot of heritage buildings in London. And yeah, so in St Anne's in Highgate, they were able to come up with a design that fitted with the historic nature of the church. The local community really supportive, Camden Council really supportive. So there's projects like that are showing that you can overcome the hurdles.
You've got to have a bit of vision and you've got to have a bit of community spirit, a bit of long-term thinking for this sort of thing.
Yeah, London is quite like that. I think one of the things about community energy projects is they really help bring communities together. And so you might need a bit of community cohesion before you can get one off the ground. But those few people talking to each other to go, oh, could we have a community energy project, can then spark a lot more. Just gives an opportunity for Londoners to talk to each other, to talk to their neighbours about the fact they share a roof and do they want to put solar on it. I was involved in a project in Hoxton, and we were really, in the end, the project fell apart because... or at least has been on hold because of the solar cuts. But we were really excited about replicating what's happened in other bits of Hackney and down in Brixton, because it would give an opportunity for a community that's got a lot of gentrification in the area. There's a lot of things that divide us, but this could be something where people could work together and a reason for us to talk to our neighbours who we wouldn't otherwise talk to. And it was really nice going to the first few planning meetings about that and just chatting to people who just happened to live around me who, for whatever reason, thought solar panels were exciting. There's something interesting about solar panels, is they really can bring people together.
I think you're stretching it slightly, though. I don't know.
Jessie is a person to talk to about the village of Borkham, where it's probably the most classic example.
I'm happy to admit to being, you know, a solar geek, you know, loving solar panels, and that's my job, to love solar, but.
When you say you love solar panels,
yeah,
are you fetishising the objects themselves, or is it the benefits?
I wouldn't take it that far. It's the benefits, but there's something about them where, and you see them on the roof, people do get excited. They go, oh, there's some solar panels, and you can see the effect of that in a row of houses. You'll get one person putting up solar panels, and then suddenly the neighbours will do it, and it becomes something a bit to show off. It's compared to some of the other things that we talk about when it comes to climate change. Insulating your roof is a fantastic thing to do, but no one ever gets excited about rolls of insulation, whereas they might not be getting as excited as I am about climate change and renewable energy and potential for solar. But I think it's fair to say people are, you know, they're interested. It's something new. It's something that feels modern and like it's capturing the future of where we're going with our energy system. So yeah, I'd stand by the claim that people love solar.
We have got, because the charity we work for used to run a big project called Solar Schools. We had a network of solar schools all over the country. We've got a few in London, and we'll probably end up with one of them today. We ran that project. It was the community around the school would get together to crowdfund to buy the solar panels for the school. So it might be like a 10 grand fundraise for a big roof that you might have in a school, and then the school would save money on their energy bills for years to go on. And so it was a good way of boosting the school budget. And we did it partly because we knew communities wanted to save their schools money and help boost schools' budgets. But we often found that schools did it just also as a way of bringing the community together and having a project the community could work on together. And one of the things that schools would say, they signed up to it because, oh, they wanted to do more about the environment, or they just wanted to make some money. But when they came out of it, one of the big things they said they got out of the whole project was how much it helped them connect with the local community. So I'd say we've got pretty good... We did quite a lot of research onto that, and I'd say we've got pretty good evidence to suggest that the solar panels, particularly with schools...
If we were taking an example where homeowners have clubbed together, I can understand that straight away. If we were talking about one of these institutions, a school, how does that bring them closer to the community around them?
Oh, well, through the fundraising for it. So it would be
When you say bring them together, you mean it gets people to give them money?
Yeah, no, right. It's the project of the challenge of can we... It's partly a fundraising challenge, but schools often have fundraising challenges for fixing the roof or all sorts of other projects. And they found the solar ones particularly powerful at getting people in. And like the local milkman might get involved or something. And local businesses would be happy to get involved in a way that for other fundraisers, they wouldn't necessarily do so. Oh, we are spotting some solar panels.
Jesse is gesturing across the road.
I think Alice is the one that pointed out to me, but I assume these are the ones you mentioned, the solar thermal.
A bit of description here. We're standing outside just past the Edinburgh Castle, and on the other side of the street is, well, you're either going to love this building or not. It's a festival of glass and steel. It looks like it's probably constructed in the last 5 years.
Yeah, I'm not going to defend the architectural value of this one, but it has done an interesting job of integrating some solar thermal panels in it, and by that I mean some tubes that collect the sunlight, the heat of the sunlight, and transfer it to water.
So we're looking, as we look at it, there are big panels, so there are lots of glazing, and then big panels. Well, you don't pay any attention to them. They look like decoration. They almost remind me of neon tubes that haven't been switched on. There are about three stories worth of panels of that size.
Yeah, and I think they've done a decent job of integrating it into the building.
So what are they doing? That's not a solar panel as I would think of.
It's not generating electricity. It's heating up water.
And how is it doing that?
I'm stretching my technical knowledge.
Hang on a minute. I thought you were a geek.
I don't want any solar installers out there listening to this to be screaming at their iPods. I'll do my best. So you've got glass tubes with a liquid in it, and as the sun hits it, it heats up the liquid, and that heat is transferred to the end of the tube, where they'll have water running through a pipe and transferred into that water and then into the heating system of the building.
So Northern link with a more conventional heating system to kind of like add a bit of heat if you need it. Yeah. But yeah, it can produce a lot of the hot water. It's one of the more efficient ways of having using solar power in the UK. I still stand by the fact that solar PV, photovoltaic cells, you know, the classic things work really well in Britain, but solar thermal probably, again, is underutilised because it's maybe not what we expect.
If we've got some solar thermal, just like we're looking at the moment, on the roof of your two-bedroom, semi-detached house, live with three, four living there, in the middle of the summer, you won't be needing any gas or electric to heat your hot water for your shower or your washing up. So it's a good technology for the UK. Again, it's something that the government have chopped and changed with their support for it, which has undermined the rollout. But yeah, so you'll see it on people's roofs around the UK.
We'll come back to policy, I suspect, at various points in the podcast. There was something that you mentioned in relation to St Anne's in Highgate, and it occurs to me with that building as well there, which is excruciatingly modern in design.
Yeah.
These are not naturally sympathetic to the built environment, are they? Or to any environment. They stick out. I know you're used to batting it away, but I suppose I'm raising the aesthetic objective.
Yeah. I think that, you know, shouldn't try and shy away from the fact that some people are going to like the look of something and some people won't, and also that things can be done well and they can be done badly, and that when they're done badly you shouldn't try and defend that. So
I just realised I need to stick my flag in the sand here, because sometimes when I raise objections like that, people go, oh, you don't like solar, but no, I'm right behind solar power myself.
I think it's quite understandable that some people don't like the way that I don't like the way oil rigs look. But, and some people might really like it. There is a kind of beauty of some oil rigs. In fact, the oil industry on Instagram is fascinating, if anyone's into the aesthetics of oil rigs. I certainly don't like the look of climate change. You know, there's other things you might be like, oh, I like the look of this, I don't like the look of that. It's an aesthetic thing. But it's a bit of the people who don't like the look of, in particular, wind turbines, but also solar panels, seem to be able to articulate that with a lot more... Well, they seem to be heard a lot more than the majority of people who are like, yeah, no, I quite like them, really. And it's quite normal to like the look of them. It's what most people in Britain would say that they quite like.
Solar panels less so, though, right? I mean, windmills maybe.
Yeah, well, when I...
There's something moody about a windmill on a hill.
I personally think that wind turbines look very beautiful, whereas, although I don't mind the look of solar panels, I wouldn't necessarily say... Although, that said, I have a necklace with a solar panel in it. I mean, it's an aesthetic object.
Are you like Tony Stark? If you take that off, does your power diminish?
I stupidly forgot to bring it with me today. But so I'm powerless. It's a totally non-functional bit of solar panel. It was an offcut from a solar farm. You get offcuts of solar panels. In fact, one of our colleagues runs DIY solar panel making workshops using offcuts of solar panels. He just buys a load of them cheap off the internet, and then you can put them together in a sequence and make your own small kind of laptop-sized solar panel, which you can use to power your phone.
You mentioned that somebody called Howard, connected with 1010.
Chair
of our board.
The chair of the board. What's he all about?
Howard Johns, if you Google him, you'll see he's a solar entrepreneur, or solopreneur, as journalists in the school. He's just somebody who has run a solar company, real advocate for solar, done some amazing projects in the southeast of England.
He was involved in one of the first community energy projects, putting some solar panels on a brewery in
Lewes,
I think I'm right in saying. So it was one of the first projects that was funded through a community share offer and owned by the community. So he's been involved right from the beginning.
But running a solar charity and a solar business?
He's no longer heading up his solar business.
Okay.
So he's been our chair for the last year and a half?
He's chair of our board, so like most charities, we have a board that sits every few months and kind of gives us advice and supports us.
Have you been doing?
I mean, I guess in terms of running it, we have a team of directors who run it. We don't actually have a single CEO or executive director. We took the decision a couple of years ago to share that job. So we have four directors that work collaboratively, but they're the people who run the charity.
Just because it's an opportune moment to do so, should we check in regarding direction of travel? And yeah. I'm tempted to do that now because we're passing a horrendously unattractive brick building.
It's Cecil Sharp House.
The English Folk Dance and Song Society.
Should we cross the road and see what the solar PV potential of Cecil Sharp House would be?
Yes, let's do that. Is that. Have we got the side there or is that the front?
I think that's... Oh, is that...
I hope it's the side, but I'm worried.
That's, main entrance would be...
Well, they've got the sign. That's not an attractive... They need something more in the middle there, don't they? Maybe a neon sign or something.
Quite, have you never been to Cecil Sharp?
No, I've never been there.
Well, if you're into folk music, it's the place to be.
That's probably why I've never been to Cecil Sharp House.
Yeah, I have a friend who's singing a choir here sometimes. Yeah.
Let's go from this side.
Yeah. Yes, we're going round. Jesse is brandishing his app. Okay, this has got to stop, people. I just want to paint the scene. Now, we all know that people are on their mobile phones too much, right? I'm sure we have experiences multiple times each day where you nearly collide with somebody who's busy texting. So the people on the sidewalk just now were a couple talking to each other, a woman jogging, and us three doing an interview. And all of us were looking at mobile phones and nearly walked into each other. Are we capable of doing anything anymore without looking at a mobile phone?
Well, hopefully not, because we've got an exciting new app out using your mobile phone to find roofs that would be good for solar panels.
I take back everything.
So I'm strongly encouraging people to spend more time looking at their mobiles, but doing it responsibly away from the busy parts of the paper.
And it is called Look Up, partly because we're like, oh, look up to the sunshine, look up to roofs, but it's also, you know, look up from your bleeding mobile phone. A joke.
Try not to walk into a solar-powered lamppost.
Yeah. Well, sure, lamppost might be. I don't think that one is, but you can get solar power. Somebody has invented. They were showing them off it round House of Parliament not long ago. Somebody has invented solar-powered LED. Oh no, let's do it. Like, I just want to talk about the LED. The LED streetlights. So a lot of streetlights around the country are being moved to LEDs, which are much more efficient. Jesse will be a real advocate of this. If people want to at home shift to LEDs, they can save a lot of money and energy just moving to these sort of new generation light bulbs. But streetlights across the country are moving to LEDs, and they've been quite controversial in places because the lighting hasn't always been right. But if you do them right, they're brilliant and they use very little energy. So these guys have built an LED streetlight that's also solar powered, and it's got enough battery to be able to store, because you don't need that much energy for the LED light to run at night. So the sun that goes on during the day comes through the solar panels, and then at midnight you have the LED working, and we have the sunshine at night keeping us safe and streets lit. It's a really lovely bit. If you're geekily into streetlights, it's a really awesome bit of technology.
Over your shoulder, I've been noticing Jesse fiddling with his app.
Yeah.
And he seems to be resizing a pink rectangle on a map.
Do you want to take us through the steps?
Yes, let's go through the steps.
So we found... Okay. This is Cecil Sharp House.
Which, easy for you to say.
Yeah, Cecil Sharp House, which folk music fans will have heard of. Classic, but it's a key icon of Camden. I don't know if we necessarily advocate putting solar panels on it, because some people love the way this building looks and might not like it. And we should be aware of some people's aesthetic stuff. But let's just see what we think our app would think, how many solar panels it
okay,
holds.
So I think we could sneak them on the side without anybody be able to see them from the ground. So I'm taking a quick picture of the building and going through the stages with the phone just to get the right bit.
I was wondering, he's pressed OK. I've always wondered with, because it's a convention on everything to do with computing that you press OK, never yes. Well, OK seems so grudging. You know,
it's
I don't mind. Americanism,
I think. So we've taken a picture. We've got the Google Maps bird's eye view of the building.
Oh, we're above it now, yeah. So, and they've got a plenty of roof space there, and plenty of sunshine falling on the roof.
Sunshine. And I'll just post my roof, and that will go onto our treasure map. And then I'm going to...
What? Your treasure map?
So everybody using this app...
You've just stolen their roof?
Yep. Lifted it off. No, everyone using this app is spotting roofs, and they get added to our national treasure map on the website, so
this
we can see...
It's a hive mind thing.
Yeah, it's a hive mind. We've got UK... We've got roofs in the UK, America, Australia, a couple in Japan. So it's gone international, unintentionally.
The app works internationally. We were just pushing it in the UK. But if anybody wants to play it abroad, they're totally welcome to. And people have been, because our map is getting like big in Silicon Valley, we noticed.
What's the name of the app again?
Look Up.
Look Up, yes.
If you
Available on App Store and iTunes.
So you want to go to the Google Play Store or iTunes and search for Look Up Solar. Otherwise, you get a load of Kim Kardashian stuff, which I think is probably true whatever you put into search.
Well, does she have sufficient capacity for solar panels?
To be determined.
We're currently looking at the roof of Cecil Sharp House on Google Maps. There is a large pink rectangle that they want to move that.
So you've got the picture of the roof. You can draw the pink box on top to tell the app how big an area you want to put the solar panels on.
Now, you're not
on.
Choosing the whole roof. You're just choosing a little section.
No, just there. Choosing the slope of the roof that is would have solar. You could put it on the other side, but I know that side's facing north, so I'm not going to.
Now we've gone to a sort of an AutoCAD, very primitive AutoCAD thing, and you're able to change the... Now, why are you doing that to the
change
house?
Change the slope of the roof. So when you're putting solar panels on a roof, you want to know what angle to the sun they're going to be. So
this is starting to seem quite complex.
Well,
this has stopped being fun.
It's fun when you've got the app, because you're just moving a little slider and the picture's moving.
The walls are entirely stable and fixed, but the roof is like a pair of lungs expanding and contracting.
Yeah, they're like bellows, aren't they?
Yeah. Anyway, so I'm just telling it roughly what the slope of the roof is, and then I'm going to use the compass feature built into all good smartphones to tell the app the direction of the roof, so whether it's pointing north, south, east or west. And that's obviously important because you want your solar panels to be facing south to capture the sun.
This has got so much... I used to be a bit paranoid about people lurking around street corners with the mobile phones. What are they taking pictures of? This is far worse. They're prospecting my roof.
Prospecting your roof, yeah.
Well, we were worried that people might take lots of photos of people's houses and people might not like that. We haven't had any pushback on that, but I would say that the best places you're likely to find loads of solar capacity aren't people's homes. It's more likely warehouses, business spaces, the top of something like Cecil Sharp House, a school, a church, and so you shouldn't really have to invade people's privacy.
So just to go back to one of the final steps, you tell it how shaded the roof is.
Look
so
at this. Are there the app is saying, are there any chimneys, trees or telegraph poles blocking the sun? Slide to the left if there are no shadows on your roof, or to the right if there are lots of shadows.
So I can see a nice big London plane tree.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm going to tell the app that there's a little bit of shading, and then finally just tell the app what the roof's made of. And that's because solar panels are very easy to install on metal roofs, quite easy to install on tile roofs, but if you've got a thatched roof, you might want to think about doing something else. But anyway, in this case, we've got a nice tiled roof, so I'm going to tell it that. I'm going to wait for the cogs to churn. A turn, rather.
Maybe in a slight backspot for internet. Wi-Fi.
Right.
If burglars are half as organised as this, we are in deep, deep trouble.
It doesn't tell you what's in the building.
No. It is telling me that the roof of Cecil Sharp House could hold 31 solar panels. That would be about 7.6 kilowatt peak output. That would be enough to power about 2 homes. And then gives you a little bit of feedback on, is the slope too steep or too shallow as an ideal angle to catch the sun? What's it made of? Is it good? Was that a good thing to tile or metal? Was the shading okay?
All right, so what happens with this information there?
It's all goes on our Met Treasure map, and there's also a leaderboard. So
okay, but you know it.
We know.
But the crucial link here is that Cecil Sharp House doesn't know.
Well, they could go and look at it. When we developed this app, one of the reasons of doing it is to give like community groups who might be talking to their neighbours about whether they wanted to have some solar potential in their area, something to play with and go out in the streets together and look at places in their local area that could use... could have solar. So, for example, the group in Hoxton that I used to be involved in, we did a little... It was really, really hard rain that day, wasn't it? It was not the best day for going on a solar treasure hunt. We went out the area, and or even though we'd been spending ages on Google Maps and just, like, we thought we knew our area and we thought we knew all the best places for solar, we had spotted a whole new roof on the top of a sports centre that we hadn't even really thought about before. And we're like, oh, no, that could have some great solar PV. The app is a toy. It doesn't tell us exactly what, you know, if you really want to know how many solar panels you could put on there, if you want to know whether it would work, things like how easy it's going to be to install, you need to get a proper consultation. But it gives you enough information to give you a sense of like, oh, it's worth us investigating that. It's worth us talking to the people who own that building about whether they'd be up for having community solar sited on that roof.
Right, that's the crucial bit there, isn't it? Somebody needs to be... approaching Cecil Sharp House and pointing this out to them.
Yeah.
Is that a function?
We could interrupt this podcast now to march into Cecil Sharp House and show them their report from the app and say, did you know that your roof would look good with 31 solar panels on? And have you thought of putting them up there? And they might say, oh, that's interesting. I might do that ourselves. Or that's interesting. If you've got a community energy group, we'd be willing to lease you the roof and let you put solar panels up.
I reckon you want a little box in the app to stick their email address in and just send them the findings.
Well, we have talked, so the local community energy group here that did the church in Highgate that Jesse was mentioning, Power Up North London, we've been on little trips around here with the app, and they might well look at our map or take the app out themselves and have a think about, you know, spaces around here that they might try and build a solar share offer on.
This is a fair question. What's your solar situation individually, Alice?
Well, I rent.
Are you fully solar panel?
Apart from having a necklace with a solar panel, I have no functional ones. No, I as a renter, like most people in London, I don't have solar.
Jesse?
I am the proud owner of a 5-watt solar panel because I can't put solar on my roof. I'm in a block of flats. But I needed to put a ventilation fan in my attic, so I bought a little solar kit for that, and that's my solar at home.
This underlines a problem, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That is a key problem in London. It's one of the reasons why community solar has a lot of potential in London, because it'll allow people who really love solar but don't own their own roofs or aren't thinking they're necessarily going to be around the area for long enough to own a bit of a solar panel. So you could invest in a local community group share offer, for example. I don't know if Jesse's got any share offers.
I invested £250 in Brixton Energy about 4 or 5 years ago. So I own a share in a solar array on Loughborough Junction. So I guess that is on top of got a little solar panel in it, but I've also got a share of a 50 kilowatt solar array in Loughborough Junction.
You're talking really directly about incentives there.
Yeah.
And let's assume that you're not investing in the solar. I mean, let's assume you're somebody who's, like most of us, living paycheck to paycheck,
yeah.
Nothing's saved.
Yeah.
The last thing anybody wants to do is shell out, you know, however many £1,000, even if the roof was their own.
Mm-hmm.
What's the incentive for getting involved in a community project where presumably you're still going to have to pitch in a few hundred quid or something?
Community energy takes all shapes and sizes.
What is the incentive to the individual participating?
For me, it was... that I wanted to see it happen. The project I invested in was the first of its kind. It was on the first community energy project on social housing, and I knew that I would get my investment back over time with a very modest return. And I did have £250, but there's other people who are involved in community energy projects who don't invest their money, they invest their time because they want to see it happen and they want to see cleaner energy in London. And a lot of projects will be benefiting the community in terms of generating a surplus fund to invest in community and efficient energy efficiency and tackling fuel poverty. So there's that incentive for people if they've got if they're motivated and they think that all the scandalous stuff around people dying in their homes and in the cold winters, you know, if that's something that gets you getting involved in community energy, investing in solar panels or dedicating your time to seeing more solar panels being put up in community energy groups is a way to get into that issue.
And you do find that it's the thing I said earlier about it there being a community engagement thing. I mean, there are some people just do it because they want to hang out with their neighbours. It's something they quite like. They sort of believe, yeah, clean energy is good. But maybe the key reason the reason they keep going back and back to the meetings is they make friends. And it's like lots of other silly things that people do in London. It's just a way of hanging out with some people.
The elephant in the room surely is the financial side. And we've talked about ideals, we've talked about community values. Mm. What about the numbers?
So I could say on the money so Jesse said he invested £250. Quite often you'll have community share offers which are much lower initial output, like it'd be £50, which isn't quite so much. It's still a lot for a lot of people, but it's also people will have £50 that they could put in a savings account, equivalent to that. And the money you get back can be very high. It can be much higher than putting in an ISA. So there's a lot of Londoners that were putting money in ISAs, keeping it away for 3-4 years. Instead of putting it in a bank that will be investing it in fracking, they could be putting it on a bit of clean energy in their local area where the money's going to be kept in the local area, and they will still get a return that is better than a lot of other savings accounts. So the financial situation is very different in the last year because of the cuts from the government, and that's one of the biggest challenges that we have. And I think like this time a year, 18 months ago, I was like, yeah, anyone with a bit of spare cash should totally put it in solar. It's a really good, like, even if you don't care about the planet, it's like, it's a good investment. And now I'm like, well, actually, you've got to really love it to do it. And that's one of the real big problems that... Do you think...
That's a bit of a debate at the moment, is what's possible. Like Alice was saying a year ago or 2 years ago, it was very much it's just financial incentive and people put their money into it because the returns were great compared to putting it in your piggy bank or in your ISA. And now with all the changes that have happened, people have been working through projects that were based on the old model because there was some, I'm not sure how you describe it, you know, there was some projects that were started a while ago just finishing up now that were based on the old model, and people are just starting now with new projects without the subsidies, and we're waiting to see exactly what kind of financial returns are possible. But you know, people are hopeful and are working on things. You know, that thing, it's possible to put up solar panels and make your money back. It's kind of bottom line. You just need to be working harder to find the right roofs.
So I think maybe there's been a misunderstanding in my mind the whole way through this, but I'm not sure the distinction is still quite clear enough for me. So yeah. I think I came into this imagining that we were talking about stick some solar panels on your roof and your energy bill, your personal energy bill goes down because you're bringing in energy in some way.
Yeah.
But instead, what I think we've been talking about is finding ways to invest in solar power, which you will not directly benefit from, except perhaps through a return on your investment.
Yes,
and yet, in the mix there somewhere, we've also had a few stick of photovoltaic cell on the outside of your building, that kind of thing. So it seems like there's a bit of a muddled line there.
If we stuck, so this is, what's that? Is that a railway shed?
There's a big building
that could easily have loads of solar on it, just up there anyway. Stick some solar panels on that, or stick them in a school, and the solar power can power the school. Or whatever building it is, or be a house, wherever it is. But there will also be extra energy that it will generate that won't be used by that building, and it can be fed into the grid, and then you can make money on it. There used to be something called a feed-in tariff, which meant as you fed into the grid, you got given a little bit of extra money from
the government. It's quite generous, wasn't it?
It was initially, and then it got cut and cut and cut and cut, and it's pretty much gone now, which is what is changing the financial situation for solar. But that is how people previously made money on solar, and why we're now having to have slightly different models for it. But as Jesse says, yeah, the people are coming up with all sorts of different ways, and I think in the next year or so we'll start to see solar offers again that are really attractive, that are just based on a different sort of set of financial situation.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the reasons in London that solar is more difficult, because you've got the mismatch between who owns the roof and who's paying the electricity bills. So if you own a house and you pay yourself to put the solar panels on the roof, it's all quite straightforward. You use the electricity that's generated, and that's free to you, so you're saving on your bills. And then in the past, the government provided some support for that as well, so that generated a bit of additional income. Now the government support has been reduced to a very, very low level, but you're still benefiting by generating electricity on your roof for free.
That disconnect, there's a potential for that to be turned on its head in some way, though, isn't there? Because coming down the tracks at us, is arguably here already, is this situation where people can't afford to buy, for sure. Mm. They're struggling to afford to rent. Mm. There's going to have to be an overhaul in our thinking about what property means to us and what form that might take, I don't know. Maybe some of this disconnect between the property that you live in and your investment in it, maybe that could be shaken up somehow.
Yeah, solar is tied to all those issues in terms of property ownership, and it's just such a tricky area for people living in London.
But what if you could incentivise renters somehow, just naturally through the shape of the system,
yeah,
to invest in their property?
In a healthy property market, people who are looking for somewhere to rent would have a range of choices, and one of the ways they'd make that choice is by how energy efficient their building was. You know, you wouldn't rent the leaky old flat that was freezing all through winter, and I think we've all lived in a few of those where you can see your own breath. You would rent
sometimes the breath of others.
Yes, if you're lucky. And we would rent the flat that was well insulated with, you know, double glazing and an efficient heating system and some solar panels on the roof that were generating electricity that you were using free.
we're a long way away.
There are landlords across the country, social landlords do often think about this, about how you would have PV on the building, partly just to reduce fuel bills for the people who are living in it. So if you're trying to build low-cost housing, one of the things you should do is put some solar panels on the roof. There's one of my favourite examples of this, Coin Street Community Builders by South Bank. The houses they built, they wanted to keep the rent low, and they were like, well, there's no point in having really low rent but having really expensive fuel bills. And one of the biggest things we have in the UK is that our energy bills are just, we generally pay a lot for our, we pay a lot of energy per bit of energy. We don't pay very much, like per bit of energy. Energy is actually quite cheap in the UK, but we have huge bills because our housing stock is so inefficient. It's so terrible. Most of us are having to pay for energy just gets leaked out through our windows and our roofs and all sorts of places like this. So people who built the houses in Coin Street were like, well, we don't want to do that. We don't want to be charging people low rent but at the same time enforcing them to have to pay a huge energy bill. So they made it very energy efficient, and they also put solar PV on the roof. And obviously, and this
nice
is a bit like
from Waltham Forest that you mentioned to me this morning, that Waltham Forest has a much higher rate of PV installation than other
PV is photovoltaic.
Photovoltaic than other London boroughs, and that's mainly because a housing association in the borough did a big solar program and put it on 1,000 roofs, and that is benefiting their tenants. So I think that's one of the areas for growth. You talk about the complications with tenants and old housing with small roofs. There's a lot of potential on social housing in London, and yeah, the efficiency is there when you're doing a big project as well.
And a centralised decision maker.
Exactly, yeah, you know, to say, okay, we're going to be doing 1,000 roofs and sending out a team to do those rather than number 5 on this road doing it and then someone turning up 2 weeks later to do the house.
Residence groups in blocks of flats where you do have privately owned flats in a big group, that they will have roof space that is, you know, they will be currently renting out as masts for TV or all sorts of other things, phones and stuff. Like, so lots of schools rent their roofs out for similar things, and those communities of house owners and renters could get together and say, well, actually our roof's best used for the people who live here, we're going to make more money on solar PV. And it could be that as the price of solar panels goes down, more and more like housing association groups will start doing that. So there's scope for people to work together to install solar. It's not that hard really when the economics of it work, which currently they're a bit difficult for, but have hope that in the future it won't be too difficult.
This has got nothing to do with what you were just saying. This is one of the loveliest spots in London.
Nice harmonica player in the background.
Yeah. We're standing on this bridge looking over the canal. Willows droop over the houseboats. Houseboats with solar panels, by the way.
Houseboats always have solar panels these
days. Popular on houseboats, yeah.
I shouldn't ask this, but I'm going to. Given that we've been in cemeteries recording before, and my guide there told me that London brick is worth money now and people are nicking it out of cemeteries. We know about lead going off roofs. We know about war memorials being pinched and melted down. What's the theft value of a solar panel?
Well, I think if you go on eBay and you buy one solar panel, it might cost you £200, but I couldn't comment what they cost off the back of a lorry. It's something I've thought about in terms of, do people worry about solar panels getting nicked off their roofs? And I don't hear anything about it. I don't think it's too much of a problem.
I think it's hard.
I've seen one news story a few years back of a couple of panels getting nicked, but
yeah, I don't know.
It's quite, because you have to pay to install them. The cost of the solar panel isn't just the panel, it's the installation. And so I see it's not quite the same as nicking some stuff that you can melt down. I wonder if it may change. And there is, like, solar farms have quite a lot of security in case people go and nick them or damage them or whatever. But yeah, I get there are all these solar panels that are just attached to houseboats, let alone roofs. Mm. It could be a thing.
I gather the
exciting
solar PV. No, not inciting.
Yeah,
should we keep going? I mean, it would be lovely to stop here forever, really.
Well, I haven't been down here before.
Have you not?
No.
Where are we in relation to other things at the moment? We're about to go on the towpath,
which people recognise. Oh,
there's the pirate castle.
Of,
yes. Oh,
yeah. The train, when you get the train out of Euston.
I've walked underneath this.
And so we're going to walk down. Also, not far from Primrose Hill.
I know where we are, yes.
If we go down here, we can walk along the canal to Camden Lock, and then we can walk up towards Hampstead Heath, where there is a solar school and a solar station.
Well, as you can tell from the background noise, we have transitioned. Are we in Fleet Road?
Yep, Fleet Road.
We're in Fleet Road, just outside Fleet Primary School. And in a way that is in no way suspicious, Jesse is now photographing the school over their hedge and typing the details in to the app.
It is half time. There are no children around. I can emphasise that. But we're not here to look down.
We're here to look up.
We're here to look up.
Yes.
In fact, we're going to see if we can see their solar panels. So this school is one of the solar schools. There are schools all over the world that have gone solar. Schools often have big roofs, and so solar entrepreneurs in the area will be like, hey, can I rent your roof? We'll shove some solar panels on it. But there was a particular programme that 1010 ran that helps schools fundraise to go solar, and gave them lots of resources to help them do it.
See them on the app there.
You can see them on the app. But, oh, yeah.
Oh, there's a picture of the solar panels.
There's about 100 solar panels on these roofs, but I don't think you can necessarily see them from the floor. So some of the schools that have gone solar with us, they've really made an effort to make it obvious where the solar panels are so the kids can see them, and it's because it's part of the school learning about energy. And some of them, they don't want it to be too obvious because they want to keep the kind of characteristics of the school architecture, or it's just inefficient that you'd have it where you can see them. It's better that it's directed at the sun than at people at the floor anyway. But they'll often, the schools will have a little computer in the building so the kids can see how much solar the school is generating and how much of their energy is coming from solar. They'll often be really excited because they'll be like, oh, loads of our school is powered by solar. But it also gives them a chance to learn about the bit of the energy that they're using in the school that isn't solar and have a think about where that comes from. So it's more than just clicking a switch. So for years we just thought that solar and schools are awesome. And so we had a project to kind of encourage them to work. And Fleet is one of the London ones, and it was 2014. I think they did it with Camden Council, but they had loads of fundraisers. They sold t-shirts, local businesses chipped in money. I think they got £500 from Budgens. It's a chance for businesses that are trying to get business from local parents to kind of show off. I don't know about Fleet, but certainly a lot of solar schools, you'd have signs up in all the local businesses saying we support the local solar school and things, and the whole community would get involved.
And there's big scope for this as well. I think something like 93% of schools in London don't have solar power.
Yeah, so there's loads more to do, and there were some promises thrown around in the London election, actually, so I can't remember off the top of my head. I think Zach Goldsmith was promising to get more schools solar, and I'm pretty sure Steve Khan's got some plans for it. I couldn't tell you exactly what they are.
So yeah,
loads more potential.
If we're looking for scope for where politicians could get involved to support solar in a London level rather than at the national level, sort of despite the national policy changes, one thing could be to support solar in schools. And you do see one of the opportunities for solar in the UK in the next few years is looking at greater devolution, and like London's already had quite a lot of that, but with sort of Manchester and other parts of the country that are getting more local control, they're starting to be able to make more decisions about energy issues in their local area and have policies that might, for example, have tax breaks or grants or just ways to help schools, energy efficiency, all sorts of other things. But solar is one of the most obvious ones. And it's such a good educational opportunity. The kids can just be like, oh, look at the solar panel. You know, I don't have them at home, but I have them at school. It normalises it. And it does let them think not just about the energy that the solar panels are making for them, but where the rest of it's coming from. I think that's probably the most important bit.
So what is Sadiq Khan's position on solar?
broadly positive, but we're still waiting for a lot of detail on it. So the Deputy Mayor on the Environment was only announced, what was it, about 6 weeks, two months ago? There was a big meeting run by a group called Switched On London just this weekend about energy in London, about how we could have maybe a London-wide community energy group. This group, Switched On London, has been campaigning for that for a while. And that's one of the things that Sadiq did say he would do, but they're sort of still campaigning about how it'll look like.
Is he fudging it?
I think he's still working it out. Some people might say he's fudging it. I'd say give him a bit of time to work out what he wants to do. There's a lot of space for the new mayor to really do something kind of world-leading. He certainly participates in parts of... There's lots of networks for mayors to get together to talk about action on climate change. It's a group called C40 Cities. It's actually based in... Their offices are in London, but they work internationally. And they're cities across the world that... Because they appreciate that mayors have a lot of power, often like... Mayor of London is one of the most powerful political positions in Europe. So Mayor of Paris, similarly, they'll all work together to think about things that they can do on a citywide level to have leadership on climate change. And traditionally, London has done things that have been taking leadership roles on climate change. And there's a lot of scope with solar or other things that Sadiq could do, and he may well do. I think he's probably just working out his options.
The thing that's exciting is the possibility of having a publicly owned electricity supply company for Londoners that would... You know, me and you could sign up to buy our electricity and gas from it. It'd be not for profit, be publicly owned, and hopefully that would also be an avenue for more renewable energy in London, so that organisation would buy electricity that was being generated on roofs in London and sell it to Londoners.
The ultimate community project.
Exactly, yeah, I think that's what people are hoping for, and we're waiting to see what the details are.
I mean, if you're seeing it in smaller, like Nottingham has they have Robin Hood Energy, named, and they have a lot of solar in Nottingham. These things are potentially linked. Other cities are doing that. We could have that. But on like the solar issue, like France has had a lot of...
Sunshine.
Not sunshine. France has done a lot of action on climate change because they held the Paris talks last year, and they kind of, a lot of politicians there really started to sort of, they saw it as being a key way of getting political capital, including the mayor. And they've famously had this rule that all new roofs have to have space for either a green roof, so having a garden, or having space for solar. And so we could see something like that being introduced at citywide levels. Or just more education programmes. There's lots of different things we could do.
As we're looking towards the future, we've got to look at the clock and realise that our future is upon us. And what would you want the takeaway to be from what we've been talking about?
There's massive potential for solar in London. We're not there yet, and we need more action from people like the mayor, but we've got the potential to generate a significant chunk of our own electricity in London with solar panels. Get involved if you've got a local community energy group. Get involved in it if you've got a roof yourself. Call up a local solar installer, see what's possible. Download our app, look up, have a play on it, and see what the potential is.
I'd add also, appreciate what's already happened. A lot of climate change, action on climate change, people think of it as something that happened in the future, something we need to get around to, something that, you know, oh yeah, I'll do that tomorrow when I pay my rent. But actually, people are already doing it. We are standing outside a solar school. The local station down here has a solar garden. There are solar gardens popping up, energy gardens popping up around London stations all over the city. My old school in Brent has just gone solar. I just was reading online, they had 200 solar panels went up over the summer. We don't look up to look and think about our potential, but like just see how much is already there. And that doesn't mean we should be complacent, but I think it's added to Jess's point about the potential of what we could do. It's also appreciating that this is something we're already doing. So you can participate, get involved, but get involved with something that's already building up quite a lot of steam.
Building up a lot of steam.
It's maybe unfortunate industrial revolution metaphor there at the end.
Almost controversial.
Solar thermal powered steam.
From 1010, Jesse Schaff, Alice Bell, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. My heart aches for some far off place,
no one could have left you. And that's all for this week. My thanks for this week to Jesse Schaff and Alice Bell. Thanks too to Bernie Barkley. Theme and incidental music was by Songs from the Howling Sea. I'm in Quentin Wolfe.
sound. You ain't never seen the light before. Just a stone's throw from your front door.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.